Hello, everybody. It's Wednesday. Once again, on these Wednesdays, we have with us a man of men. And many of them don't exist anymore because this is a man that knows a lot about what used to be called the Bill of Rights and the Constitution, both of which have been destroyed by the little freaks running and ruining our country that people call politicians, parasites, arrogant, narcissistic, sociopathic, pathological liars. Once upon a time, there was a man by the name of Dwight D. Eisenhower, five-star general, supreme commander of the Allied forces in World War II and two-term president, who said that any man seeking the office of president is either an egomaniac or crazy. Welcome to America, and welcome, Judge, because your article that's coming out tomorrow really, really clarifies how our life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness have been robbed from us.
Well, it's funny you mention what used to be called the Bill of Rights. It is really a bill of temporary privileges. The government treats rights as if it were a water faucet, and it turns it on when it wants us to have freedom and turns it off when it doesn't. That, of course, defies the concept of a Bill of Rights, which is that our rights come from our humanity and are immune from governmental reach unless we violate somebody else's rights. A bank robber violates the rights of the depositors in the bank. But a person who speaks out in ways that the government doesn't want to hear cannot have his rights or his passport taken away just because the government hates and fears what he's going to say. I'm speaking about our friend Scott Ritter. And that, of course, is mild compared to what the government does to other people. The column is in a series of what if, what if, what if. Every one of those what ifs is answered yes. What if the government is a fraud? What if it just takes our money and doesn't do anything? What if the government exists only to further itself? Well, the answer is yes, yes, and yes. Why do we accept this? Why do we have a supreme law of the land, the Constitution, that everybody who works for the government, from a school board janitor to the president, swears an oath of allegiance to, and they don't follow it? They don't even treat it as a guideline. They just ignore it. That's what we're going through. Presidents start any wars they want. Congress authorizes all the spying it wants. Congress spends whatever money it wants. And life goes on. When George Bush became president, George W., the federal government's debt was $2 trillion. That's 24 years ago. When he left office, it was $7 trillion. Where'd the $5 trillion come from? Afghanistan and Iraq. Why did we fight those wars? To get the country's attention off of 9/11. The federal government's debt today is $36 trillion. In 2035, it'll be $50 trillion. And today, we spend $1 trillion a year in debt service. Doesn't reduce the principal. It just pays the debt. How much longer can we go on like this? Not much longer. Before the federal government collapses, its money will be worthless. No one will want to work for it. It'll fall like the Soviet Union fell.
Yeah, you mentioned about Bush. People, you know, one of my lines is that when all else fails, they take you to war.
I have used that line so many times, and every time I use it, I give you credit for it.
Thank you. And people forget the dot-com bust preceded the war on terror, 9/11.
Right.
Little Georgie Bush's ratings were in the toilet. The country was going into a deep recession. The dot-com bust was big. The country was going down hard. 9/11 happens, and the whole game changed. I got the numbers right here. ABC News, March 11th, 2002. 6 months after September 11th, Americans are expressing enormous sustained support for the war on terrorism, broad approval of George W. Bush's job performance, and a swelling sense of patriotism that leads most to say this crisis, you ready, has changed the nation for the better. 82% approve of Bush's job performance. Ready? While that's 10 points below his peak in early October, he still has scored higher, longer than any previous president in polls dating to 1938. Even more people, 88%, approve Bush's handling of the war, while 64% approve strongly, and more than 8 in 10 think it's going well. All right.
Hey, did they ever find those weapons of mass destruction that Saddam Hussein had, that Phil Giraldi told Bush they didn't have, that Scott Ritter told Bush they didn't have?
Again, look at the stupidity of the general public. People swallowing the crap coming out of that little boy's mouth, a little ignorant piece of scum, a little daddy's boy. You know, George Carlin said, it's one big club and you ain't in it. You think little Georgie Bush would have gotten anywhere if his daddy wasn't George Bush and his uncle wasn't Prescott Bush? Oh, yeah, the guy they said that they dealt with the Nazis. Is that the guy you're talking about?
Same guy.
Yeah. Look at the little jerk up there north of us up in Canada. Little true dope. A little arrogant piece of scum nothing. My daddy was Pierre Trudeau. Look
I
at the
his daddy. I thought his father was Fidel Castro.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's any substance to that rumor or not.
But anyway, what you've written, and you're going into what if, and you said, what if somebody robs a bank robber, then they're guilty, right? But how about the banks that rob us?
Correct.
They're not guilty.
How about the government taking our money and giving us nothing in return except a restriction on our freedom?
Yep. Yep.
So,
I asked you about this article that you wrote. I said, yeah, well, what if? She said, you know, you said I was angry when I wrote this article. He who is not angry when there is just cause for anger is immoral. Why? Because anger looks to the good of justice. And if you could live amid injustice without anger, you are immoral as well as unjust.
St. Thomas Aquinas?
Yep.
Well, I was angry. I wrote it Sunday night, Monday morning. I'm just really sick and tired and fed up. You and I do these. We're happy together because we're friends for so long. But we really discuss such downtrodden things, and every once in a while it gets under my skin. The American government is complicit in genocide and in Gaza and in the West Bank, and it gets worse and worse every time you look at your computer screen. You were telling me before the show started about what Haaretz, the mainstream Israeli newspaper, is reporting that the IDF has done lately. It's just despicable slaughter, and we are paying for it.
Yeah.
I'm doing a segment on my podcast with the retired Marine Corps Captain Matt Ho, good friend of Ritter's and McGregor's and Giraldi's, on whether the IDF soldiers themselves are liable as war criminals, whether the American soldiers helping them are liable as war criminals. Joe Biden ordered the American soldiers to build a pier off the coast of Gaza. $320 million, and it's gone out to sea. It's collapsed. Like that. $320 million, not taxpayer dollars, money borrowed in the taxpayers' names, gone.
We wrote about this, by the way, in the Trends Journal when they first announced it. We said it would be a total failure.
You were 100% correct. They won't even talk about it now.
A total failure, and it shows you the failure of the United States military.
Yes.
It has not won a war since World War II. And how much money did they steal from us to fight the Afghan and Iraq war that you were just saying?
Oh, a couple of trillion. I think it's probably over three. Yeah. The NDAA, the National Defense Authorization Act, which the House just passed, that hasn't been passed by the Senate, is up to, I think, $886 billion for the Pentagon for the fiscal year beginning October 1st of this year. The Russians have a far better military. The Chinese have a far larger military. And we spend more in our military than the Russians, the Chinese, the British, the Germans, the top 12 countries combined. We spend more.
You remember just before 9/11, I forget that little piece of scum. What's his name?
There's so many of them, it's easy to forget.
I know. And they couldn't find, what was it, $23 trillion worth of...
$200 million they couldn't find. They still can't find it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if it was Rumsfeld or...
Rumsfeld. That's who it was. Yep.
Yeah.
And
they never found that $200 million. Somebody's fat and rich on it.
Yeah. And again, you just mentioned, and you've said this before, that's why I'm mentioning it. You said when they put in, like you have in your article over here, you talk about the, what if the National Security Agency, the NSA, the federal government's 60,000 person strong domestic spying apparatus has convinced Congress that it needs to cut constitutional corners in order to spy on every person in America. So when you put these 60,000, for what? For what? So they can spy on us? And you said if you put the CIA, the spy organizations into this, you're looking at over $1 trillion going into the military industrial complex a year.
Correct. 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 And try and find out how a lot of that is spent. You'll never get to the bottom of it, like the $200 million we talked about. Even though our friend the Constitution says no money shall be spent from the public treasury except that which is recorded in a public journal. Where's the public journal showing us what the NSA and the CIA and the DOD have spent? It doesn't exist.
And then you go on to write, what if the Franklin D. Roosevelt government knew of the attacks on Pearl Harbor before they came? What if it looked the other way, knowing that the American people would react with fury, and thus America could enter World War II, a world which FDR desperately wanted? What if 3,000 sleeping sailors died because the government looked the other way? What if looking the other way in the face of a certain attack constituted murder?
One person was prosecuted, the admiral, even though this was orchestrated by FDR himself, Admiral Husband Kimmel. I believe he was eventually pardoned. He didn't do anything wrong. They were sitting ducks. It just shows you the radical abuse of power, the disregard for human life, the disregard for the Constitution. Presidents love to kill, whether it's Donald Trump sending a drone to kill General Soleimani while he's on his way in Iraq. He's an Iranian general in Iraq to have lunch and to talk peace, or whether it's George W. Bush unleashing hundreds of thousands of troops to slaughter a million civilians in Iraq and Afghanistan, presidents love to kill.
How about a quote from the Nobel Peace of Crap Prize winner Barack Obama in the book Double Down? Quote, "I'm really good at killing people." Yeah.
They consider people like you and McGregor and Ritter and Blumenthal and I as outliers.
Yeah.
We are the true patriots. They are the outliers. They just happen to be in power, and they happen to have their finger on triggers, and those triggers expel real firepower that kills innocent human beings. LBJ, Vietnam, yep. 500,000 American boys, and in those days they were all boys, sent there. 52,000 came home in body bags. For what? So that he could run for re-election as a wartime president? Eventually, of course, he was chased away from running for a re-election because it had become so unpopular. And then when the Pentagon Papers came out, we turned out that the generals were lying to him and he was lying to us.
Yep. You know, you mentioned FDR. Again, this is from History Today, mainstream media. Because you had mentioned in one of our podcasts about the United States cutting off oil in Japan. This is prior to 9/11, prior to December 7th attack on Pearl Harbor.
Right.
United States freezes Japanese assets. July 26th, 1941. July, right?
Right.
August, September, October, November, December. 5 months before 9/11. You ready?
Five months before December 7th.
I'm sorry, December 7th. On July 26, 1941, President Franklin Roosevelt seizes all Japanese assets in the United States. You know why? In retaliation for the Japanese occupation of French Indochina. Now, wait a minute. What the hell do I care that the Japanese are doing in, what do they call it? French Indochina? Oh, you mean the dirty French that invaded Vietnam, Cambodia, and Laos, robbing their rubber, their tin, rape, pillaging, and murder? Why, how dare those Japanese go in there? Oh, it gets better. You ready? It goes into President Roosevelt swung into action. Britain and the Dutch East Indies followed suit. Dutch East Indies? You mean the dirty Dutch in Indonesia? Stealing, robbing, pillaging, murdering? Followed suit. The result? Japan lost access to 3/4 of its overseas trade and 88% of its imported oil. They only import 100%. Can't understand why they bombed Pearl Harbor. I can't figure it out.
Hmm.
Nobody talks about this.
Nobody talks about it. When you and I say things like FDR manipulated the Japanese into Pearl Harbor, Harry Truman was a mass murderer, we are outliers, but history has vindicated that. We now know from telegrams and from notes that they knew that the planes were coming and they manipulated them to come, and they let those poor sleeping 3,000 boys in those ships die a watery death.
Yeah. Again, I would not have looked this up had it not been for you mentioning it, because all I did was I Googled up FDR Japanese oil and boom, this whole article comes up. I didn't know about this. Again.
Well, this is not taught in American schools. You'd have to do the research on your own, as you just did.
And again, here's another part. You know what else angered the Americans? Japan followed up by occupying Camran Naval Base. That's in Vietnam. 800 miles from the Philippines, where Americans had troops, and the British base at Singapore. Wait a minute. What the hell are we doing in the Philippines? Oh, but of course the British could be in Singapore because the sun never sets on the British Empire. We could murder and steal all over the world. Why, we have His Majesty, a royal piece of shit, a murderous crime syndicate.
Thank you, Sir Winston.
Yeah.
They shouldn't even laugh at it when you consider all the lives taken and all the property stolen. And now the king of the hill is the United States with our exceptionalism and our exporting of democracy. Baloney, we don't export democracy, we export death.
Yep. And again, speaking of exporting death, we supply the weapons of death as we're doing as the genocide of Israel. And this war is ramping up. They're increasing the war as we had forecast against Lebanon, Syria, and Iran. We said they're going to do this, and now the war in Lebanon is really escalating. And again, the American media calls Hezbollah a terrorist organization. You know why they're terrorists? Because these are the people in Lebanon that fought against the Israeli occupation and beat them in 2006. So you're a terrorist if you try to throw out the invaders. Just like there's terrorists in Iraq and militants in Afghanistan who tried to throw out Americans after they invaded. So this war is going to escalate, and World War III is already begun, and it's just going to get worse.
I'm not sure where it will begin, whether it's in the Middle East or Ukraine, but it's starting in both places.
Yep.
And as for calling people terrorists, to George III, Washington, Jefferson, Madison were terrorists.
Yeah, we're terrorists too.
Right.
Yeah, because we want peace and freedom.
Right. To Joe Biden, Gerald Celente, Scott Ritter, Douglas McGregor, Philip Giraldi, and I are terrorists.
Yep.
This is crazy. What a crazy, crazy, sick world we live in. They consider themselves the patriots, and all they want to do is kill.
Yep. And to them, our founding fathers, just like our Bill of Rights and Constitution, are nothing more than pieces of shit. Because George Washington's farewell address, part of it, the nation which indulges toward another an habitual hatred, like we've been taught to hate Russia all our lives.
Right.
We had us hiding under desks when we were kids in case an atom bomb went off. Or an habitual fondness. Oh, we love Israel. Yeah, the phony Israel that was created by the Balfour Declaration in 1917. The nation which indulges toward another in habitual hatred or an habitual fondness is in some degree a slave. It is a slave to its animosity or to its affection, either of which is sufficient to lead it astray from its duties and interests. Here we are, led astray.
Well, it's probably going to get, well, I know we say this every week, but it keeps happening. It's going to get worse before it gets better.
You know, Judge, everybody listening, you have to go, if you want to know what in the world is going on from top people, you want to go to Judging Freedom. The guests he has on, mentioned Phil Giraldi, Douglas McGregor, Max Blumenthal, Scott Ritter, one after another. And Judge, tell me some of the things that, like you just had Giraldi on, what's some of the things that he's talking about?
Well, Giraldi,
everyone, this is the top CIA guy that Judge mentioned that went into Bush's office, showed him the proof. Look, there are no weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. And Bush said, get out of here. And Giraldi, being the real man that he is, quit the CIA.
That's a true story. It's not a story. It's a true recitation. It's an accurate recitation of facts. Giraldi has been writing about the vice grip that the Israeli government has on the American government. Thomas Massey, Republican libertarian congressman from Kentucky, told me on my show that every Republican member of Congress but him has a minder from AIPAC, a person, a semi-official member of the staff who consults with him daily and reminds him or her of what the Israeli interests and needs are. When Massey learned what this was, he said, "You're no longer welcome in my office. Don't call me. I won't return your phone calls." He's the only one who's done that. This is just an example of the vice grip. Not far from where I live is a Democratic primary tomorrow in Westchester County.
Yep.
AIPAC has dropped over $20 million in a Democratic primary for Congress. That's more money than all the primaries in the country combined, because the congressman, a left-wing progressive with whom you and I disagree on almost everything, has called out Israel for committing genocide.
Yeah, that same guy, was it Bauman or Bowman?
Yeah.
Yeah, he also supports the Israeli genocide. He supports all the bills that sending the weapons and on and on.
No. This is the guy that opposes them. The Democrat that is running against them is the one AIPAC is supporting. So, Phil, to answer your question, Phil has been doing, he's on vacation now, but he has been doing a lot of research on the depth of, it's not just AIPAC. AIPAC, he says, is the best known of these groups. There actually are other groups that are better funded than AIPAC that have their tentacles into virtually every Republican member of Congress, House and Senate. Massey's the only one who's come out publicly saying, "I don't want to have anything to do with you."
You know, once upon a time, they made up this story that we have a House of, quote, representatives, that they're supposed to represent the people. But all they do is they represent the people that give them the money.
Correct.
That they sell out to. We have an article in this week's Trends Journal about all these former congressmen and congresswomen, after they leave office, getting jobs with the companies and the institutions that they supported while in Congress, and the hundreds of thousands of dollars that they're making in salaries, millions, and their total sellouts. And talking about sellouts, Netanyahu is going to be coming here. And by the way, a number that I saw, that he's worth $80 million.
Wait a minute. He's worked for the government his entire life. He was a furniture salesman after he graduated from MIT and before he got into the government. Wow. No wonder he's on trial for corruption. That trial resumes the minute he leaves the prime ministership.
Which means that he's not going to be leaving. He's going to keep escalating the war.
Correct.
And you had mentioned that he's coming to America. Little Chucky Schumer, who said that he didn't like Netanyahu and he shouldn't run for president, supports his coming here.
Right.
And you said the last time he was here, how many standing ovations did he get?
In a 35-minute speech, he was interrupted 55 times by standing ovations by the House and Senate on the floor of the House. They're going to attempt to break that record. I also understand from one of the young people that comes on my show, a young, serious libertarian by the name of Ryan Dawson, that there will be massive demonstrations in New York and D.C. against Netanyahu when he is here. Last time there were not. This time there will be. According to Ryan, they expect more people to demonstrate against Netanyahu in New York and Washington than they expect at the Democratic National Convention against Biden in Chicago.
Do you think Biden will be running?
No, I think something's going to happen.
Yeah, I agree.
He's so decrepit. It is so obvious. I mean, whatever you think about Schumer, he's not stupid. Yeah. The last thing they want is Trump to be president. He's so decrepit. There you go. I mean, I feel sorry for him when I see this happening, because he shouldn't be in this job. And his wife should know that.
But again, it's very important. The Biden administration is nothing more than the Obama administration.
It's the third term of Barack Obama. Yeah,
we wrote about this when he got elected.
Right.
And what's his name? Clayton Morris, redacted. He's been coming out and saying they're going to run Gavin Newsom.
Well, I think Newsom would be an attractive candidate from the Democrat perspective, from anybody else's perspective. If there's one place in America worse than Washington, it's California.
Yeah. Actually, I just came out with a study. California ranks as one of the worst states. The cities, actually, San Francisco, the worst. We put the data in there. Your office vacancy, here it is. America's worst run city is revealed, and it's not New York or Chicago. It's San Francisco.
Yeah.
So now it was Gavin Newsom that locked down America first.
Right.
Fight the COVID war.
Except for himself at the French Laundry.
Right. $400 a plate joint.
Right.
Yeah. And that other clown, London Breed, whatever her name is, running San Francisco, her going out and playing too as everybody's locked down.
Right.
They don't mention in that whole article the office vacancy rate and office occupancy rate and how bad this has been caused because of the COVID war. Your office vacancy rate, meaning nobody in the offices in San Francisco, is almost 37%.
Wow, vacant. Well, that's going to cause foreclosures and bank failures.
Exactly.
Nobody's paying rent.
And before the COVID war, according to sf.gov, the office vacancy rate was 5%.
About normal. Wow.
And now it's 37%.
Wow. Once arguably one of the most beautiful cities in the world.
I used to love San Francisco.
Yes, yes.
Anyway, you know, when I was a young guy, I was the number two guy running a major trade association. And we used to put on big trade shows. And we put one on in San Francisco back in the day. But I loved going there.
Yeah.
And going back to Gavin Newsom, and I talked about it's one big club and you ain't in it, as George Carlin said. Look at that little arrogant boy. And you cannot find a more arrogant, narcissistic piece of crap than him with his attitude. My daddy was a lawyer for the Getty gang. How do you think I got there? He brags about it. A Getty gang lawyer. Yeah, keep them out of trouble for the robberies and stealings that they may have committed. This guy could win because most of the appeal, he puts on a good show. And you look at the latest poll, just came out. The people don't want Trump or Biden. Never before higher numbers that the people don't want either candidate. So a lot of people will go out and vote for Newsom because they hate Trump.
Right. And they'll vote for Newsom because of what you just displayed on the cover of the Trends Journal.
Yep.
That the poor guy can not only is unable to compose an English sentence, the poor guy can't stand up.
No.
Those are not cartoons. Those are real photos.
Yeah. Judge, thank you again for being. And again, we're going to have a big rally here. You talked about they're having a big protest against Netanyahu. We're going to have a peace and freedom rally that Scott Ritter says should be a million-person march for peace. And that if we don't have it, we lose. And Judge Napolitano will be one of the speakers along with Ritter. And we're lining up others as well. September 28th at the Four Corners of Freedom, John and Crown Street in Kingston, New York. The seeds of democracy were sown here. It's the most historic Four Corners in America. The only place with pre-Revolutionary War stone buildings on each corner. And that's why we're having it here. To bring back the spirit of our founding fathers. It does not take a majority to prevail, but rather an irate, tireless minority, keen on setting brush fires of freedom in the minds of men, said Samuel Adams. And we are that irate, tireless minority. And thank you, Judge.
And we will set those brush fires of freedom.
Amen. And hey, women. Thanks, Judge. And again, everybody, don't forget, go to Judging Freedom, because the judge is doing everything he can to bring freedom back to America, and the great guests that he has. Thank you.
Thank you, Gerald.